Well, the reading is Philippians chapter 1 and from verse 12 to verse 18. Philippians chapter 1 and from verse 12 to 18. Now, I have a confession to make. Until this morning, I was planning to come here and speak on this passage, and I had 2 points to make. The second point was the major point, the big point, and I chose hymns to fit in with the second point. The first point I think is important, it is to me anyway, whether it's any use to you, well, we'll see, I hope so. But the hymns don't, strictly speaking, and I like to choose hymns that do go with what I'm saying, but the hymns, strictly speaking, don't fit this subject I have for you this morning. But I felt very strongly that I should just speak on the first topic. And when I come next time, if there is a next time, then I'll try and do the other topic. It may sound double Dutch to you, but all I'm explaining, if I hadn't said, it wouldn't have mattered much, but all it means is that the hymns we've had, Hail Thou Once Despised Jesus, Immortal Honours Rest on Jesus' Head, and so on, you might say, well, that wasn't much to do with the subject. In fact, the hymn that somebody chose just before we started had more to do with the subject, but that's the explanation. But I thought I wouldn't mess everybody about and change the hymns at this late stage. I didn't want to tax people too much, okay? Right, so let me just read these verses there. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 12. Now I want you to know, brothers, oh, by the way, Paul is in prison at this time in Rome. And he's in prison, as he will explain here, for the gospel's sake, for Christ's sake. Now, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. As a result of my imprisonment, he's saying, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard, the soldiers, and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. Because of my chains, there's another blessing, most of the brothers in the Lord, that's in Rome, the believers there, have been encouraged to speak the word of God more courageously and fearlessly. It is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so in love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. Yes, and I will continue to rejoice. I'm going to break the reading there. Philippians chapter 1, verses 12 to 18. Now, what I'm saying this morning may not have any relevance for you, but I think it will, as a matter of fact. But it certainly has relevance for me. I need a good dose of what's in this passage. I suppose you take medication like I do. We used to put it on spoons and drink it, didn't we? Well, I need a good swig of this morning. And I need to learn it. Think about what I've just read to you. I put it to you that it's a very remarkable passage. It's staggering. I'm amazed when you read those. It's easy to read it, But when you think about what's going on with this man at this time, the fact that he can speak in this way, well, that staggers me. It takes me out of my comfort zone. It rebukes me, challenges me, it encourages me, but it sets before me a standard that I have not attained to. I'm not speaking to you this morning because I've attained and you haven't. I'm speaking to myself. I need to get somewhere near this man. I need to approach what this man can think and feel and say. Let's remind ourselves, he's in prison. Now, prison's bad enough. I've never been in prison myself. I've visited Warwick Castle and gone down in the dungeon. So I have seen something of what prisons can be like. Some of you will have done some visitation, I suppose, in prisons. Anyway, we've all seen it on films or television or we read about it, so we have some idea. What it must be to lose your freedom. I've never lost my freedom in my life. I might feel I'm limited now. Well, I certainly do. I expect you feel that as we're getting older. We are limited. Things I used to do easily, I can't do. And that's frustrating. And, you know, I see people, and young people, and I think not long ago I could do that. And that's a frustration for us. Well, for me, anyway. Now, this man is a preacher, too. Now, he can still speak. I suppose he speaks to his soldier jailers next to him. He's chained to them. Remember Peter, Acts 12, he was chained between two soldiers. And there'd be the other inmates in the jail. They didn't all have, you know, nice comfy rooms with colour television in the corner and hot and cold here and everything else. It was a desperate kind of life. And he's cut off from preaching. What this must have meant for this man, I don't know. Now, perhaps most of you are not public preachers. But I heard that Lloyd Jones addressed the ministers, the preachers that he knew at one time in a meeting, and he said, "What will it be like for you when you can't preach anymore?" Now, that may not sound any warnings to you, but I know that. I'm getting towards the end of my public preaching, I think. And the loss that the Samuel Rutherford, the Scottish preacher, when he was prevented from preaching as they were, talked about his dumb Sabbath. I wouldn't use the word Sabbath, but he talked about his dumb Sabbath. The frustration of not being able to go where you want, to do what you want, and to preach. And whatever your ministry was, whatever your labours were, you can't do it anymore. I mean, Bill with his radio work, cut off from it, whatever. What would this mean to us? What did it mean to him? I mean, he really felt it, I'm sure. I said just now about going into Warwick Castle. And as I said, I went down into the dungeons. Even to go into the dungeons, just as a goggler, you know, and just having a look was enough. The rusty cages on the wall where they hung up men. I remember one. It was called the Oublier. It was Norman Castle, of course. 11th century, 12th century, I suppose. Oublier, the forgettery. They put a man in there. There's a little confined space. They lock him in there and literally forget him. And they put him... That Oublier was in... I won't describe it for you. You have to use your own imagination. It was in one of the most despicable places you can imagine it. He could be. And that was his life for the last few days or whatever it was of his life. I don't want to digress too long on it, but I read about the gunpowder treason, the gunpowder plot, Guy Fawkes, Catesby and others. Now, Guy Fawkes was actually put to the rack. There was a rack in England. I dare say there's no one now, not one now. There was one rack in England, and that was in the Tower of London. It was illegal, but the rack would break men. It was enough, though, when torture was allowed, it was enough even for some men just to be shown the rack. Not let alone put to the rack. Guy Fawkes was put on the rack several times. But if you know what the rack is, that stretches a man. But it was just enough to see the thing. It would be for me. My mind is like that. I can see the problems. I can see the troubles coming. All I'm saying to you is, I mean, that's the 11th century, 12th century. What was it like 2,000 years ago in a Roman jail? I don't know. Must have been horrible for the man. That was not the end of his troubles. Some men were outside imitating the gospel preaching, pretending to preach, and they were doing it to rub salt into his wounds and to insult him. He tells us they were out there. They were taking the mickey out of me. They were laughing at me. But I noticed that as I read it out loud to you. But what does it matter? I find that absolutely breathtaking. What does it matter? I'm suffering. I'm deprived. I'm cut off. Whatever. But what does it matter? And twice he says it in the verse 18, rejoice. Rejoice. This man is rejoicing in suffering. And it's a big capital R, rejoicing, and it's a big capital S, too. He really is suffering. Now, I'm not suffering imprisonment. I'm not suffering this people taking the mickey out of me and all that kind of stuff. I'm not suffering what Paul did. But in my time of life now, I know what frustration can be and difficulties and strugglings and worryings and tension and stress and all those kind of things. You probably don't, but I do. And I'm struck by this man that he can say, well, what does it matter? Rejoicing. Rejoicing. There's the challenge for me. Now, I've been on this theme a little bit lately. 3 weeks ago, yes. 3 weeks ago, I was speaking on 2 Chronicles 32, I think it is, yes. When Sennacherib was invading Judah, this is Assyria, and Assyria had wiped out the northern kingdom, Israel, and now they turned on Judah. And Hezekiah the king took some steps to defend the city, Jerusalem, but he also addressed the Jews. And the way he addressed them, I gave the title to the discourse, was Battle in the Mind. He knew that he had to win the battle in the mind of the Jews, get them to think properly. If they didn't think properly, they'd be terrified. But he got them to think properly. One illustration I used, and it might ring a bell with some of you, was Winston Churchill on May the 13th, in 1940, when he went to House of Commons for the first time as Prime Minister. He had enemies on the continent, Adolf Hitler, facing the channel coming across. He had enemies in the cabinet, Chamberlain and Halifax, who would have appeased Hitler. And he had enemies behind him in the Conservative Party. They didn't cheer him when he came in. When he came in, it was a stony silence. But when Chamberlain came in, they, although they just chucked him out, they sang for he's a jolly good fellow. But this man stood up, and you know his speech, what have I got to offer, and all that kind of stuff. You ask what our aim is. our aim, and so on. Well, what is our policy? It is the wage war. And you ask him, what is our aim? I can tell you in one word, he said, victory. That's what he said. Victory. Now, I think I can say, almost certainly, he didn't believe it. He spoke privately. He said, is it too late? He didn't see how it could be done. But he knew he had to win the mind. What I'm saying to you is, how can Paul face this suffering, face this trial, face this anxiety, face this stress, whatever it is that's coming into his life, how can he face it? And the answer is, he's thinking right. He's got his mind on the right thing. It's not the thing at all, actually. And that's battle in the mind, you see. A week ago, I was speaking on backbone for the timid. And Paul writes to Timothy for the same reason. He's putting backbone into him. And how he does it, 2 Timothy chapter 1, he gives him a tremendous statement on the gospel. He's getting him to think about the worth of the gospel, what he's standing for, so that Timothy can get his mind in gear. And if his mind is in gear, if his understanding and thinking is right, then he will have courage to go on. Now, what is Paul doing here? He's taking his own medicine, my friend. His medicine is this: God works in all things for the good of them that love him. Romans 8:28. He says to the Philippians, set your mind on good things. Think about these things. And he's setting his mind, you see. He tells us. Now, what is his mind? He's thinking. He can see God's hand in this. That's how he learns to rejoice. And the lesson for me is, in my lesser circumstances, the lesson I have not learned after 80-odd years, 70-odd years in the gospel, 60-odd years in the gospel, the lesson I haven't learned is to set my mind right, thinking right. Now, what's his thinking here? He says, well, look, everything is working out well. I know it isn't right for me, and I know it's bad for me, and he goes on to talk about praying to be delivered, but what can he see at this time? He tells us. He said the gospel has actually been advanced by my suffering. I've no doubt the devil wanted to stop the gospel, but actually what he managed to do was advance the gospel. This is what Paul can see. He says, look, I'll tell you how it's advanced. It's not wishful thinking. I'm not pretending. I'm not making believe. No. For a start, he says, all the guards, all the soldiers, these tough nuts, you imagine what they're like, they're all talking about that bloke down there. Have you heard about that bloke down there? Why is he there then? What has he done? And it's something to do with somebody he calls Christ. That's what he says. They're all talking about Christ because of me. In the guard room, with all the pin-ups and all this, you know, all the whatever they're doing, Christ is being preached. I could never get to the guard room and preach Christ to them, but this has got there. And he's gone up through the palace too. All through the palace, he talks about it. Right up to the living quarters. Maybe in the Caesar's bedroom even. Maybe in the living quarters, in the dining room, in the sitting room, whatever. They're talking about it. Who's that chap down there? What's he there for? What's it all about? Christ, Christ, Christ. And he said, I'm glad about that. That cheers me up no end. I can see God's hand in it. And that's what I've got to see in my life too. God holds the key of all unknown. Yeah, it's the next line, and I am glad. Yeah, I wish I could be glad. When it's going difficult, you see, if other hands should hold the key, or if he trusted it to me, there's no might about it in my case, I would be sad. But Paul can say, look, God is in control. What's more, he said, some of the brothers outside, many of them perhaps, the brothers outside, they become more bold. Now, I know exactly what this is like. Myself, I'm not a number one. I know that. I'm stronger when there's somebody just ahead. That really helps me. Martin Luther, for example, he made many bad mistakes. Some terrible mistakes. Dreadful. But, you know, I forgive them. I forgive him for everything. Because he and people like Wycliffe and John Huss and people like that, Claude of Turin and other men, they had the courage to go first, to break out, to stand clear of the mob and stand for truth. And that gives me courage. And I was thinking of an illustration. Several years ago, my wife and I were down in Devon walking, holiday, and some young friends that we knew had a young baby. They had just come to the area. I think they had family in the area. And we arranged to go for a walk. But because they had a young baby, things were late in the morning. We normally start quite early in the day. It was autumn time. We start normally quite early. But they couldn't start till midday or something. Anyway, we met at Avondam, wherever I think it was, and we went for a walk. It wasn't a very serious walk, but it still was pretty wilderness country compared to centre of London, or whatever you might say. It was quite isolated. Well, we were walking, and it was getting on fairly late on an afternoon. The darkness was coming down a bit, and the mist was rising. And our young friends, this young baby, was getting fractious, and they knew they had to get back to the car, change the baby or something, and feed it, whatever they had to do to it. And the young man said to me, he said, look, he said, we've got to press on. I mean, we weren't old people by then, but we were not walking as fast as they were. And he said, we need to press on. This path here just leads back to the car. It's all right, you know, okay. Yeah. So this young couple with the baby pressed on. And of course they grew more and more dim in the mist. I caught my wife's hand and I said to her, I said, we've got to keep up. I said, the path is here, but I don't know if you know moorland paths. They can often just go out for a few yards and sheep tracks come in and you get lost and you don't know where you are. And I didn't know where I was. And I knew my only hope was to keep him in view. So I held her hand and we, whatever it cost to our feet, however painful it was, we had to keep pressing on to keep him in view. Number two, you see, somebody ahead. And Paul says, look, they see me suffering and they think, well, we can do it then. If he's standing for the gospel and he's meeting this, then we're going to be bold. And Paul says, I rejoice in that because they're all preaching the gospel more boldly. Remember he said to the Ephesians, pray for me, he said, that when I preach, I won't be mealy-mouthed, I'll preach it boldly as I ought to preach, Ephesians chapter 6. Not pull any punches, spell it out. He said, I'm glad they're doing it. And even the men who were, as I said, taking the mickey out of him, laughing at him, trying to make trouble for him, he said, they don't realize it, but every time they imitate me, every time they mimic me or whatever they're doing about me, they're preaching Christ. Now, he's not rejoicing that they're preaching it for the wrong reason. He's not giving us a blank check to say, it doesn't matter what kind of spirit you've got. No, that's not. The point is, though, Christ is preached. There's an illustration about George Whitefield. Some people from a tavern went along to hear George Whitefield preach the gospel. And they did it for one reason. They would listen to him. They would see his mannerisms. I've got them. You know that. You can see them. I can't, but you can see them. You know the words he uses. You know they knew the words he uses. They mimicked it. They copied it. And they went back to the tavern. And one of them stood up on a table and pretended to be George Whitefield and copied him, you see. And I don't know if it's apocryphal, this story. I hope it's not. And somebody was converted. Paul can see that God turns everything round for good. God is working all things for good. Oh, I suppose about 50 years ago now, a man preached on that in Wiltshire. Romans 8:28. And the next day, he had a phone call from a lady. And she said, Harry Matthews, the man's name was. She said, Harry, the text you preached yesterday, you know, all things. Today, she said, it's been a wonderful day. Everything's gone well, and you know, and it really has been. Everything has been working together for good. Now, Harry's comment was this. That's a good, of course. Everything goes well, God is working out of it. But when everything goes badly, that's the secret. When everything seems to go astray, as Robert Burns said, ugly, you know. The best laid plans of mice and men off go ugly, go astray. When all around my soul gives way. I've sung that I don't know how many times. Heartily, wonderful. When all around my soul gives way. Dear friend who's long since departed, used to say, election is a wonderful truth, he said, isn't it? But it's the living on it that counts. It's the living on it. Yeah. Paul is living on it here. And although he's encouraging me, and although he's challenging me, he is rebuking me, because I've still got to learn this simple lesson. In all things, God works for the good of those who love him. When all seems to go away, go wrong, and go astray, somehow or another, God is bringing good out of it, even though I can't see it. I look back on my life, I don't know if you do, I look back upon my life and upon my public efforts, and I'm not looking for the opposite from you, and you, I think, well, it's been more or less a waste. I you can feel that kind of thing. But the truth is, we don't know. Paul would say, trust God. God had his purpose, and he still has his purpose. And in our little lives, I hope you'll be able to feel as you face this coming week. I don't know what's coming. There's a poem, I couldn't find it. I will find it one day. There's a poem which says, many a morn starts fair with the sun, but by the afternoon the clouds have come. And I think we all know that. It looks lovely to start with, but it can all go wrong. What does going wrong mean? If God is in control, if God is sovereign, if he's leading, if he's directing, then all things are working well. And Paul rejoices, and he rejoices above all in the fact that the Christ, the gospel, the word of God, as he calls it, above all, if you look at the text, and this was the second subject, but that'll be a month's time now, Christ, that's the subject. Look at the passage and you'll see he says, keep saying, Christ, Christ, Christ. And he rejoices that they're all talking about Christ, and his sufferings have brought this to pass. I'll say it again, if only I could learn this lesson, how much trouble it would have saved me, how much doubt and question and stress and anxiety and thinking about. I don't know if I've ever told you about the story about Lloyd Jones. He knew a man, an old man, and he said, I've had a long life, he said, and I've had many troubles, most of which have not happened. Yeah. Well, that's me. The amount of energy that I've wasted and the cost to my constitution over things, if only I could have seen the hand of God and recognized his sovereignty. It's not an academic subject. When I was a young man, I could argue to the cows come home on Calvinism and Arminianism, if you want to know. I could argue about it. I have my views about it now. But it's not a thing to argue about. It's the thing to live from. The free grace, the sovereignty of God, his purpose. And he really is making sure that everything in my life is for his glory. It doesn't always seem like it. I'm not pretending. Don't go that like that lady with Harry Matthews, you know, it's all gone well. It's when it's not going well as it seems to us. It wasn't going well for Paul, but he could see the good in it. I want to learn that lesson. Well, that's what I wanted to say to you. That was the lesser subject, but I thought it was important for me, so I've left it with you. I hope you'll find some value in it.